Albany Symphony's Dogs of Desire has launched Hot with Mustard, featuring 10 extraordinary emerging composers from across America who have been putting some sizzle into the end of summer with thrilling new works. This has been going on for a couple of weeks now, but still a lot still to come. The composers, who are some of today's most exciting new artistic voices, created short works for Dogs of Desire, the symphony's genre-bending 18-member new music ensemble. David Allen Miller is the maestro and artistic director who says during difficult times, music is a source of inspiration, hope, and comfort. We always need inspiration, hope, and comfort on this program, which is why we love when David joins us. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Joe, my dear friend, it's so great to talk to you. I'm fine. Thank you. I'm good. I'm well. I wanted to say before I say anything else, that the thing that is the greatest inspiration, hope, and comfort to all of us is hearing you every morning on the radio. I just want you to know that.
Well, that's
speaking for your legions of fans, of whom I am one of the most avid, that you have kept us sane this 6 months. So thank you so much to you and to Alan and to everybody there. It's been great to hear your steady voice.
Well, it's lovely for you to say that. I'm glad that the quiver in my voice doesn't come through a lot more loudly because it's certainly there. But I appreciate the kind sentiment.
Well, I do mean it.
You know, I see you all over the place on social media. You've been very busy over the last 6 months doing things and trying to, you know, keep going as much as you can. I know that's been difficult. Give us a sense of what this time has been like for you.
Well, it's been, as you know, and everybody knows, very challenging for everybody, certainly for us in the arts, since everything really just kind of slammed shut in early mid-March, and we all had to cancel the remainder of our seasons and all had to figure out how to go forward in some meaningful way. But I must say that, yeah, thank you, Joe. I feel like we at the Symphony have been trying to be as proactive as we possibly can. And you know, the funny thing for orchestras is orchestras are not, by their nature, the most cutting-edge entities. In fact, one might argue that we're a little bit reactionary as an institution. I didn't say that. I hope somebody else said that.
Yeah.
But I have to say that a lot of us orchestras had not really gotten with the internet and social media and figuring out virtual ways to deliver our product in ways that other industries had. And so in a way, this has been like a real trial by fire. We've all had to kind of jump full steam, as everyone in the world has had to do, into this completely virtual world. And in a way, even though, you know, it's been a very difficult time, particularly for our musicians who now don't have work or have much very limited work, on the other side, the only positive I can think from our perspective is that it really is forcing us to engage with the virtual universe and has been very interesting in that sense. So we've got this great series, which we can talk about. We're about to unveil our whole virtual season. We're going to be doing all of our subscription concerts virtually for our public and hopefully an international public as well. So we're changing our formula for delivery, but trying to maintain our artistic activity as best we can.
I am very curious because it seems in what you have just described, there are two big things. One is to keep up your public face, to stay out there, to remind people that the Albany Symphony Orchestra, most know this, but is still vibrant and going on, and there's a lot of cool things happening. But also the very real concerns that you and many other arts organizations and just everyone worried about staying afloat and keeping the doors open. And when can you go back to whatever normal is going to be? And that just must be a tremendous balancing act.
It is. I mean, I guess I feel like I've been less panicked than some people in my world, in that I've sort of, maybe it's because I'm older now. I'm almost 60.
Yeah.
And so I'm not quite in the highest risk group, but I'm not in the lowest risk group at all. And I've sort of just assumed from the beginning that things aren't going to be, quote, anything like normal until a year from September, until the fall of 21. So I've kind of been assuming, and I think we at the Symphony have really been working, I think, very responsibly. You know, we've tried at various points to see if we can do live events, et cetera. But, you know, the governor's been very, you know, understandably cautious and proactive in a way other governors have not been, much to his credit. And so even when we considered doing outside free events, and then it turned out that, you know, we wouldn't be able to have more than 50 people at that either, we decided it wasn't viable. But so we've been working and creating contingencies all through the summer and the spring and adapting those and changing those. But I think we really feel very confident that, you know, the answer is we have to have an ongoing regular virtual presence through the year. And then if in the spring, in the winter, whenever it happens, if things begin to improve, we can add a live presence. So in that sense, I think we're doing the right thing. But you're right that there are these two challenges. If we want to come back strong in the fall of 21, the world will be changed. We will be changed. We're not going to go back to whatever normal was. We're going to go to some fabulous, much better new normal. But at the same time, we want to be sure that we can see our organization, our institution, our art form through this difficult year. And we so appreciate all of our subscribers, our donors, our patrons, our friends, our community leaders, our government, for supporting us as they are, all these arts institutions, through this difficult year.
I want to talk about the series. Before I ask that question, though, let me ask, if you don't mind, a crass question, which is, you have this great thing that we're going to talk about. Can you make money off of it?
Oh, absolutely not. No, this one is not a moneymaker.
It's a freebie.
This is a community gift.
Yeah.
I mean, the nice thing was we did get a little bit of PPP money in the spring, and so we were able to pay our musicians for all the spring work they lost. So we made our musicians whole through the end of the season. This coming season is a whole different set of challenges because we want to figure out how to make sure that our musicians, who rely a great deal on the money they earn with us, that they have some part of that. So that's a whole different challenge. But this was really, you know, we wanted to finish the season in a meaningful way. We wanted to stay in touch with the community through the summer. We wanted to particularly support our young composers, about whom we feel so strongly. And they're all sitting at home with a lot of projects canceled and not nearly enough to do. So we wanted to engage employ our musicians. We wanted to support our composers by commissioning them, and we wanted to give a gift to our community. So this Hot with Mustard project is completely free. It's completely for our gift to our community.
Okay. So how did it begin, and what was the idea behind it?
It really began with that we wanted to continue to engage with young composers, as you and I know a lot of the listeners know. The Albany Symphony is, dare I say, famous and quite not unique in the country, but a real vanguard leader
yes.
in the country.
Famous
in championing
and successful. Famous and successful at it.
And sadly not rich, but all those other things, those good things that rich
yeah.
doesn't go with. Yeah. So we really wanted to, I think the initial impulse was to do something for our composers, who are generally hungry and now are hungrier than ever. So we identified 10 wonderful young composers from across a panoply of places, some from the West Coast. We even have a young man who's from Australia and is starting at Yale in the fall. And some of our favorite composers, some composers we've never worked with before, but we know who are on our radar. So we commissioned each of them to write a 6-minute piece to be played by our new music ensemble, Dogs of Desire, which is this wonderful 18-member mixed ensemble that kind of explores the world of American popular culture. So instead of percussion, we have a drummer, we have keyboards, we have two female vocalists, and it kind of skirts the world of kind of new art music, dabbling in jazz and rock and pop and all that. And so we commissioned the composers, they wrote the pieces, they gave them to our 18 wonderful Dogs of Desire musicians, who at home video and audio recorded themselves. Then we sent all that material to our beloved producer, who happens also to be our principal clarinetist, Wei Wong, who has a fabulous studio in Brooklyn where he lives, Skillman Music. He assembled these beautiful videos, very artistic. So we've now seen two of them, Alexis Lam's piece last week and Carlos Banderas' piece this week. And he's going to be doing all 10, each one with a different kind of video, very artistic video treatment. And then each Sunday evening at 6 p.m., we put the new one out. So for the next 8 weeks, we've done two, so we have 8 more to go. every Sunday night, we sort of unveil a new beautiful world premiere live video visual audio performance by a young emerging composer. And we make it available on the Albany Symphony's Facebook page, on our website, on my Facebook, on all the musicians' Facebook, on Instagram, all our other social media. So you can find it if you want to find it at the Albany Symphony website or at the our Facebook page. And it's just a beautiful, roughly 6-minute piece each week, a kind of gift to the art and to the community.
It runs Sundays at 6 and will go pretty much through the 4th of October. And it, as you say, these are people that you love working with, and that it's an opportunity to hear this incredible music that is often new and important.
Right. Actually, the next one is the most kind of an unconventional one, because it's an arrangement transcription of a famous Dolly Parton song, Light of a Clear Blue Morning.
Yep.
Annika Sokolowski is one of our favorite composers, is a big Dolly Parton fan and wanted to do a treatment of that. So she sings on it. And I haven't seen it yet because it's not coming till Sunday, this coming Sunday. But if you want, check it out. It's going to be really great. And the last two were very beautiful and artistic. And I've just been really pleased with the way it's come out. And the only sad part is it proves that you really don't need a conductor, because I wasn't actually involved. I was involved in everything, but they don't need a conductor because there's a click track and they have a MIDI. And so the musicians each have done their own part and then Wei assembles it. So I'm kind of out of the artistic product, but I'm very much overseeing, the vision of the thing.
But yeah, but you get to, you're participating, you're musically participating, correct?
I am. Well, I'm not conducting. I mean,
no, you're not conducting, but you're right. Yeah. So
yeah, I'm the tone meister, whatever you want to call me.
All right. Yeah. It surprises me that you're going to be airing something on Sunday and you haven't seen it yet.
It is odd, isn't it?
I would think.
And I would be much more nervous if the first two hadn't come out so beautifully. But yeah. I feel like these are just gorgeous little things. And the great thing is the Dog's Desire, even though we've been playing for 26 years, we've got a very loyal following.
Yep.
We always play at our American Music Festival every spring, and we have a lot of people who come, but it's kind of a well-kept secret, and we haven't really had a digital presence, and with these new 10 pieces, we'll now have this great body of visual works on the internet, and we're actually unveiling a new Dog's Desire website in the coming weeks. So we've been very busy through the summer kind of doing things we've wanted to do, we've never had time to do, really setting ourselves up for the next iteration of how we're going to be. And the great thing is that this series takes you basically till early October, and then our subscription concerts will start in mid-October and run through the spring. So we won't be interrupted. You know, some orchestras have chosen not to play in the fall or to do very reduced seasons. We're really trying to keep all of our subscription concerts as they are virtually, and then if possible, physically, actually. but we've really made a decision that we don't want to disappear at all. We want to stay very present to our community, to all of our wonderful supporters.
Is it possible to know how, basically, I mean, it seems impossible to plan and know, obviously, what the future is going to bring. That's an impossible task.
That's what I've learned, because we have meetings. We have so many meetings, and the meetings are always, I'm sure you have the same thing. Like,
yeah.
Well, we have to adjust our plan because of the things on the ground. So I've never been so unclear about what the future will bring. You know?
But with that said, it also seems that, I mean, we all know that everyone's going through hard times. We don't know who's going to, we hope everyone survives, but we don't know that's the case. I'm wondering about what kind of conversations you have with other artistic organizations, both orchestras such as yours and even other artistic organizations within the community that give you some hope that you can share with us that say, okay, things are going to be okay.
Yeah, I there's no doubt. I mean, the times when I get most despairing, Joe, is when I drive through any downtown in America,
right,
of any size, because that's where you see the small retailers and small businesses and,
they're
and
gone.
Big businesses. And yeah. They're either gone or they're on life support. They're having so much trouble. I must say that and I'm sure that there's going to be, and there already has been and continues to be, great damage in the arts. And I heard the wonderful interview you did yesterday with the lady from the Munson Williams about how many small museums are never coming back. And that's true of our world, the orchestra world and the music world as well. But I would say in a certain way that I don't want to say we're in the sweet spot, because there is no sweet spot, but small, relatively small, nimble organizations with great community support systems like the Albany Symphony, I think are going to emerge in a way the most in the strongest way. I look at the biggest institutions like the Metropolitan Opera and the New York Philharmonic. The challenges they face are insurmountable. I don't know how those people wake up in the morning. So they have so much money at stake and so many assets that they're trying to support and protect. We're much more nimble just by virtue of our size and scope. And we also, by virtue of having lived and worked so hard in this community and really tried to serve the community, have so much community support that I think we feel very confident of our ability to weather this difficult time. So I think the answer is those organizations that have made themselves most embedded in, most essential to, most beloved by their communities will survive and will weather this. But certainly there will be great damage done everywhere.
You also, as a person and as a leader and as a group, are very clever and very imaginative.
Well, we try to be. We believe that same old just isn't going to cut it. And that's sort of what I mean about my industry, about the orchestra industry. It's not by its very nature very innovative generally. But there certainly are great innovators within the industry, and this is a time to really think in entirely new creative ways. And I think we are uniquely equipped to do that because we already do so much new and unusual innovative work. I know you don't have that much time, but I mean, for example, if you don't have any time, it looks like we're out of time.
No, you're all right. Go ahead. We're going to push the next guest. Go ahead.
I'm looking at the 11:30. I know that's the key break time there. But I was going to say, we've just redesigned our entire education program for this year to be totally virtual. And we're going to do this whole world music thing where you meet our clarinetist who takes you all on a journey about the Western clarinet. But then he's going to toss you over to a klezmer clarinetist who will toss you to a New Orleans clarinetist who will toss you to a Syrian clarinetist. So we're really kind of embracing the world and doing all sorts of cool new virtual things that amplify what matters to us. So it's a time for great destruction, but innovative reconstruction for those of us who can be nimble enough to do that.
I hope you don't get mad at me, but I want to get personal with you for a moment, because I
miss you too, Joe. Oh.
But not only do I think
I want to come to Greenwich and go to the bookstore with you.
You are just one of the great characters of our region. But I must say, you, my friend, first of all, your son has been doing really cool stuff online. And
Ari at Home. I want to plug him. Ari at Home. Check
out Ari at Home.
So he usually does a Friday night stream on this thing called Zoom Memes for Quarantines on Facebook. It's like an hour stream where he just improvises based on stuff people say to him. It's quite extraordinary.
It is quite extraordinary. Now, the other night I went in, because I've been watching it and I've really been enjoying it. The other night I go in and he, for some strange reason, has a deer head on. And you and I just look and I see you on Zoom watching this. And the look on your face was just priceless. It was both pride and concern mixed in, and I thought this is the parental moment right there. That's great.
I'm sure all the parents whose kids have come home feel the way I do. It's like we are so appreciative for this gift of our children coming back to us, even though they're miserable to be trapped in their parents' houses. So I feel great about that. But I've learned, as I always do from my children, I've learned so much from him because he is so attuned to the virtual world and he so masters it. He's already solved latency, the big question of how to get two people to collaborate in real time over the internet. He was rapping with his friend in Georgia on his stream. It was quite extraordinary. Yeah. So he's been a great innovative force for me in sort of thinking about what we as the Albany Symphony can do. And even this series, Hot with Mustard, is in a certain way kind of inspired by the work he's doing. It's not nearly as cutting edge, But so that's the great thing about the pandemic. You get to see your kids. So fantastic. Yeah.
Well,
so, we're having a great time.
That's good.
I'm more than he, but we're still having a great time. Yeah.
Well, God love you all. You're doing wonderful work, sir. It's Hot with Mustard, and you can find out more by going to the AlbanySymphony.com website, AlbanySymphony.com, and find out what's going on there. David Alan Miller, you're a dear friend. I thank you so much. A virtual hug to you, and I look forward to when we can get together and talk about stuff.
Thank you, Joe. You keep doing the magnificent work you do. It's just keeping us alive and sane. So thank you
for that. Thank you very much. David Alan Miller, thank you. AlbanySymphony.com for more information. The Dogs of Desire and their Hot with Mustard series. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.